everyone. I'm Kareem Ray, your host at the One Soccer Nation podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Marco Savino, a visionary in the soccer industry and the driving force behind Aitor Pro. As a founder and CEO, Marco has transformed the way of soccer, how clubs utilize data, emerging technology with sports intelligence. His journey from a fitness coach to a leading and groundbreaking sports data management platform offers a unique perspective on soccer's digital transformation. Join us as we explore his innovative approach to soccer analytics and how it's shaping the future of the game. Marco, thank you so much for taking the time today. How's it going?
Thanks, Gary. Thanks a lot for hosting me today. It's been great, to be honest. Great period of the year.
Absolutely. So what is Aitor Pro?
So, I have two versions. So the fastest one for all the people that are confident with the gaming industry, I usually say that we are the football manager in real life because it looks like a video game, actually. So in the longest pitch is that we are a platform of intelligence that centralizes all the operation and transforms the data into insights in order to streamline the decision-making process both on and off the field. So it's basically an app integrator system that really streamlines all the operation and communication sharing with all the stakeholders in the club or federation.
Amazing. And you have some really nice jerseys that are signed in the back. I also see a sponsorship from Aitor Pro. From what I know within the U.S. landscape, you guys are working with existing USL championship clubs. So if you could just mention some of the clubs that use your platform, that would be good, professional clubs that are using the platform.
Yeah, at the moment in the U.S., we're working with Lane United, Rhode Island FC, and Loudoun United. Those are the three teams. And we plan, of course, to have a more aggressive strategy to access the U.S. in the next 2-3 months, of course. It's going to be one of the main markets.
And what about in Europe?
In Europe is where we are well established, of course, because we are here since the beginning. So I would say we're very strong in Italy, as I have an Italian background, of course, where we have 16 professional teams, which 9 of them, they actually in the first division, Serie A. But we have totally about 42 clients across 14 countries at the moment. So it really depends where the clubs or the federation is, because we have a global outreach. We don't really focus on one specific area.
Understood. So Marco, one of my favorite questions to ask is, how did you get involved in the beautiful game?
Yeah. This is a really nice question because you're asking me to go back in time, and that was probably the best period, my life, is when you transition between, being a student and moving to the job that you love. So I can tell you quickly that I have a very eclectic background because I'm a former athlete from actually Italian kayak national team for about 15 years of my life. And at the same time, my background, academically speaking, is pharmacy and medicine. So that's what I've been studying. And at the same time, I was a little bit of a geek, I was a data geek. So I really like everything regarding the technology, data. So I tried to match these three parts of my life, which is like sport, like physiology, and data or technology. And I had a chance. My first job in football or soccer, was with a company called StatSports. It was a GPS tracking company. It's one of the main ones at the moment. It's one of the global leaders. And that gave me really the chance to approach top clubs since day one. So I was very, very lucky to find this opportunity. And this was back 16 years ago.
Wow. So how did you make that transition from, being a fitness coach to founding Aitor Pro?
Yeah, this is it's really nice because this is something that it's a sort of awareness that I developed over time. So in my first position working in football, I was a sort of account manager, product specialist for GPS tracking system at that time. GPS was not a commodity like today. So I was a kind of in the elite world, and there was no competition. So it was very easy to access all the top clubs. And starting from there, one of my professor at that time, and one at the moment is a friend, of course, a colleague, and also a shareholder with the pro at the same time. He took me with him, and I became basically a full-time sports scientist, part of a coaching staff. So in that moment, in my first 2-3 seasons, I've been practicing the sports science job. I was taking care about basically everything about the player. I was training them. I was doing all the off-the-pitch analysis, collecting data from other departments, running the recovery strategy, S&C. So I was under pressure. I really enjoyed that period because I learned a lot of things. But at the same time, in that moment, there was a sort of trigger, you know, the hey moment for me. It was like, wow, I'm doing a lot of work, and all of this I'm doing is not really impactful. Because at the end of the day, you know, the coach doesn't use my analytics to take a decision. So I felt a little bit frustrated. And at the same time, as I told you before, I was one of the guys playing Football Manager in FIFA, you know, so I was playing video games. I say, why we don't replicate the same experience, but for football profession? I mean, we're managing millions of assets for clubs, even in the lower division, we're talking about millions. And in that case, I believe that, and still I believe that every single club needs something like that, whatever is either from or another system.
So there is a problem, and then, you know, gaming, you said, why isn't there a system like this for real life? And you created that solution. So you often hear entrepreneurs go along their journey and share that problem solution. So for you, what was like the most challenging thing to transition from, you know, more so of a employee to a entrepreneur? Because, you know, those are two different mindsets, and, you know, comes with, you know, a transition period and then, you know, responsibility and risk.
Yeah, 100%. It was very challenging. And at the beginning, actually, it was a kind of relief because, you know, when you're an employee and you want to push, you want to improve yourself, you know, sometimes the work environment doesn't let you grow at the pace that you want to have, of course, because I wanted to go very fast. I was very aggressive on every single thing I was managing, even though I've been head of performance, director of performance in my career then. But that wasn't enough. So when I transitioned at the beginning, it was a sort of relief because I was kind of, you know, the boss of myself, you know. But the biggest challenge when I built Titer Pro was to recruit the right people. You need to find the right mates to go through this journey, because it's going to be a sort of roller coaster. It's going to be an amazing moment, but also very, very deep down sad moment, because, you know, you feel everything a sort of burden on your shoulder. So I believe that finding the right people, I think, is the most important and the most delicate part of any entrepreneur, at least at the beginning. Then, of course, later things change, you know, people come and go. But the founders, those are the most important.
So when you started, how many people did you start with on your team?
We were in 3. Being honest, you know, I've been designing everything about Titer Pro even before to found my co-founder. And I was very lucky because I started in Italian University Accelerator, which is pretty famous. It's called Politecnico of Milan. It's one of the top 5 universities in Europe. And I found this guy, which is my current co-founder, is also my CTO, that was very passionate about video games and applying that type of experience into the real world. And thanks to him and at that time was my professor, then he became shareholder of the company, which was the guy that had most of the know-how, we tried to merge these 3 skills and then create the product. That was the beginning, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was back in 2000, between 2015 and 16.
Got it. You mentioned fantasy football. You know, I've heard about fantasy football. It's pretty popular. I don't I've never tried it myself playing fantasy football, but what's so popular and fun about it?
Yeah, here it's super popular, of course, fantasy football, especially in Italy, because you have to consider that fantasy football in the last 20 years has always been there in Italy. Now you have a website, a new application, you know, that can manage the fantasy football for you. At that time, it was straight on the journal. So every Sunday, there was all the ranking with all the players. So it was a kind of a social thing. Everyone was meeting at the bar on Sunday, you know, before or after the game, checking all the rank for each player. And that was very funny. And that's why it became so strong, especially in Italy. And then in the last probably 5-6 years, it's exploded everywhere on the globe. So I'm happy to see, you know, such a nice memory from my youth. You know, now it's a part of our, let's say, society, something like that everyone does.
For sure. You know, when we talk about soccer in the U.S. versus football in Italy, you know, the culture is completely two different worlds, but it's this, you know, let's just say it's the same game. Football in Italy has a completely different culture and a longer history than soccer in the U.S. You know, what is football like in Italy? Can you paint a little bit of a picture of what football is in Italy?
Yeah, I can tell you one sentence. Football is everything in Italy, you know, for most of the people. And this is good and bad at the same time, because it's always, you know, you put in the shadow of all the other sports. And football is the main, is national sports for us. You know, this, it's everything about football. We have a game every 3 days. So we're not going to miss anything. We have like 3, 4, 5 division, including amateur division. Everyone is playing football since it's young. And this is part of culture, I have to be honest. However, this is changing. It's changing a lot. And I can tell you also why. Because even though it's very important, everyone is following football on a regular basis. Before it was more like a social event. Now everyone is following football by himself, you know, because the technology allows us to access it in a different way and to get it, you know, anytime we want. We have highlights, all these type of things. Before it was slightly different, because you have to gather with friends, you know, like on a specific time of the week to watch a specific game. And most of the game they were playing at the same time. So you had a very different TV show, you know, that was like moving from one game to another quickly and telling you the results, you know, all the it was that was the anchorman. It was amazing, you know, describing all the action in real time. Now it's completely different. Of course, you can follow like 10, 15 games in a weekend, because they are all a different time of the day. So we lost that kind of sacred moment, you know, that was like 10 to 20 years ago. But of course, football grow now. The thing is that also, Karim, if we think about the way kids are playing football, that really give you a good understanding how things are changing, you know, for the future. And the reason why is because when I was a kid, I'm not that old, you know, I'm 37 this year, I will turn 37, but let's say 20 years ago, like 25 years ago, everyone was playing in the street here in Italy. So it was, again, even a social gathering things, and you were trying to emulate your champions, you know, all these type of things. Now this doesn't exist anymore. You don't have kids playing in the street. You have kids playing in the soccer school, you know, so everything is kind of regulated, structured. And this, I would say that killed a little bit that vibe. Even though, of course, I mean, this is a progress. We can't go against the progress. It's a natural evolution.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the game's changing. You're seeing a lot more fast speed, because, you know, the way the next generation they're growing up right now is on TikTok shorts, reels, very short form, 30, 60 second form content. You know, attention spans very short nowadays. So you're seeing, you know, the 7v7 games come alive more, you know, a lot of digitalization, entertainment, which is pretty cool too. And you could see it's definitely gaining attention. You know, with saying that, going back to EiderPro, how have you guys revolutionized data management and decision-making processes with soccer clubs?
Yeah, this is a very interesting part because, you know, what we're doing is trying to just provide a tool to the clubs. And I always say that the tool that we provide is not just, you know, an hardware. It's not an hardware. It's not something that is tangible, but it's something that really goes together with the process and the culture of the club. Because what we're trying to do is bring, you know, a sort of tool that is streamlining the operation and also bring all the strategic information of the club in the same place. So at the same time, also at the fingertips of the decision makers, because everything you have on the laptop, you have it also on the mobile, of course. And this, I would say that has a 3 to 4 main benefits. Of course, then we can talk about a lot of micro value, you know, that we add usually to our clients. But I would say the first thing is time saving, because considering that you access one unique source of truth and not like 5-6 pieces of technologies, you know, to get the same information. And same thing, money saving for the same reason. But also, once you have all the data available, of course, we need to avoid the overwhelming of data, you know, because that also is very dangerous. But once you have all the data available and structured and ordered, you know, and we can try to provide some key information to the decision maker, you're going to improve the decision making process. And if you improve the decision making process, you're going to have better performance, whatever is on or off the pitch. We are talking about a general better performance of the club. And regarding this, I can talk about the finance side, not just talking about, you know, what's happening on the pitch, because most of that part is because of player and coach, is how you prepare the game, how you feel. So there's a lot of variables also that we cannot control. But everything around the player, to make the job easy, to make them perform at their optimal level, this is something that we can impact on daily basis. And in that case, even if I'm able to provide that 1% improvement to a club, I will be the happiest man of the world, because that 1% is going to be an exponential growth over a few years' time. So that's why, and that's probably the main revolution that we bring into the clubs, having everything together in the same place.
Got it. What has been the biggest challenge and reward in integrating advanced technologies into traditional soccer club structures?
Yeah, this is another interesting one, because it gave me the chance also to explain that I believe that the state of art of the football industry at the moment is very fragmented, and you have different stages at different level, not just depending on geography. Because you have like clubs, for example, in Italy, which are like big clubs, they are still operating like in a very, let's say, old-fashioned way, and they're still getting the results. So you can't say nothing to them because the process works. And then you have like new clubs that are trying to do everything in a new way, but they're not getting the same results. However, what the biggest challenge here is that when you approach traditional clubs, most of the time the main issue are the people and changing the habits of the people. It's like moving from Android to iOS or vice versa, you know. So it's not going to be an easy choice for everyone, especially considering that you have like people and stakeholders within the club. I'm talking about the back office staff, you know, like doctors, sports scientists, you have physiotherapists, financial analysts, match analysts, scout, a lot of people, you know, like you have 30, 40 people. And some of them, you have to consider also they have 70, 75. So that also, it's an important factor to take into consideration. So we have to basically make the onboarding very, very smooth for those type of clubs. And instead, there are other type of clubs which are very easy to work with. You know, usually an onboarding lasts about 1 week, 10 days. For a traditional club, it can last up to 1 month. And for like a club which is a little bit smarter, you know, with technologies and data, it can last even just a couple of days. So just to give you the idea of the difference. And also another thing is that when you have a smaller club, I believe everything is much easier because also the chain of command is shorter, so you can have much bigger impact. Instead, like bigger clubs, you need to ask authorization for everything. So sometimes, even if you're, let's say, as a former kayaker, paddling in the right direction, you're going in the right direction, that the initiative, it will be stopped from some political dynamics internal in the club, you know, and things are not moving forward. So the best innovation is at smaller level, you know, a lower level, not at bigger level.
Got it. So, Marco, in your view, how do you see soccer analytics evolved over the years and where do you see them heading in the future?
Yeah, this is also an important part because before you mentioned that, you know, like players now are performing much better physically, of course, and you have a lot of digital tools allowing us to collect more accurate data, for example. And that thing was the main thing that really helped, especially, of course, the physical part to grow because we understood the performance. Before I told you, you know, I was working with GPS tracking system. Then in the last 10 years, a lot of new camera, you know, and new video technology came out, you know. And now is the time of the AI because we got the data and we were full of data in the last 15 years. We didn't know what to do with this data. Then it came all the video analysis. And now it's coming the AI, which is helping us because it's much bigger computational power than ourselves or just an Excel file. Of course, to try to manage the data in the best way possible. However, this is very dangerous at the same time because I believe that the technology is going much faster than the industry at the moment. So the people, I mean, even though everyone is thinking that football or soccer, you know, like is a cutting edge industry, is very old fashioned. The state of art is very old fashioned compared to many other industries at the moment around the globe. So this is going to be a challenge in the future because you're going to have a big gap between, you know, like new users, you know, which are probably our age, you know, the youngest generation, the oldest one, and how to use this tool to get the most out of the data.
Mm. Understood. I just had a question about Italy. You know, we know football is the, one of the most popular sports in Italy. It's the number one most popular sport, right?
Yeah, it's number one by far. Let's say the number two is like number 20 in any other country, just to give you an idea.
Are there any other popular sports in Italy?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we have like important traditions. For example, it's a country that has a lot of coast, so there's a lot of sea sports. We're very strong at volleyball, for example. The volleyball championship in Italy is very, it's probably the top championship in the world at the moment. Then we go rugby, which is an important, we have important tradition in rugby as well. But also like, for example, if you check at the Olympics, we are a good runner, we are a good swimmer. So this is probably, I don't know if it's the geography, Italy is a bit weird, you know, because from north to south, every 50 kilometer, everything changed, you know, like the geography, the people, the way people speak, the food. It's such an agglomerate of different culture and opportunities because you go from the mountain to the sea with just in 1 hour, in 1 hour time, you know, driving a car. So, for example, you know, I can mention such a small country of 50 million people has so much gold Olympic medal. And this makes you think about the way we approach life in general, you know. But I would say that there are a lot of, let's say, minor sports which are famous and wants to emerge in Italy, but they're kind of cut from football because, let's say, 95% of the people are still looking at football, watching football on Saturday or Sunday.
So football is the top.
Yeah.
You know, reflecting on your diverse experience, how have your roles in various soccer capacities influenced your approach to leading ITERPRO?
I would say that the two main roles that really give me sort of know-how and experience. So the first one was my first job, as an account manager. So I was trying to understand what type of challenge my client had. And my client, they were mainly football, fitness coach, sports scientists, and coaches. And in that case, I understood from the outside, what they need. Then when I moved into the coaching staff, I was part of a coaching staff, I see everything from the inside. And I understood also that there are a lot of dynamics that are not, there are rules which are not written, let's say, And in that case, you have a sort of illumination, you understand, that how things are working for real. So these two positions for me, they were crucial to understand how to set up ITERPRO and also to approach the other clients. But I have to say also that even through the ITERPRO journey, things changed, because at the beginning we were talking mainly to people on the field side, and now specifically I'm talking mainly to owners, CEOs, CFOs, sporting director, because even our target changed a little bit. So I would say that these two roles they were the crucial one for me.
Got it. I got three more questions there, Marco, if that's okay. Can you elaborate on how ITERPRO supports clubs in talent development and scouting?
Yeah, of course, because considering that, and now we go back to the original problem, because I say if we have a fragmented technology and we have different source of data and let's say also where we collect the data, we always have a sort of challenge or we struggle, to merge this data and getting one unique answer. But when we have to assess a player, we cannot see the player just from one point of view. There's a psychological factor, there's a physical factor, there's technical, there's tactical as well. So they're all different type of things. Of course, being analytical, too much analytical is not that good, because you cannot really separate all this part from one person. We're still human being at the end of the day. And so everything is merged together. We should have a sort of holistic approach. And ITERPRO really helps in this, because once you track all the data in the same place, sometimes automatically, because we integrate a lot of technology, of course, this is going to make the job of who is going to assess the player much easier. And this works for both talent development, where you're going to have a lot of data, because, of course, those are the data from our own player, but also the scouting part. Because now, as I said before, with the computational power, you can filter a lot of data. You can filter also you can run videos. You have videos available for every single competition and league in the world. So this is literally saving loads of time and also headache to scouting, sporting director, and academy manager, of course.
Got it. I noticed I'm saying ITERPRO, and you're saying can you say it again?
ITERPRO. Yeah.
So for our listeners, I'm saying it in the North American version. So when I say ITERPRO, I'm not saying it wrong, guys.
No worry, Karim. Sometimes I say ITERPRO as well, so it's totally normal. I'm shifting into the, let's say, English way to say it.
I mean, you are coming to the US in 2 to 3 years soon, so you gotta let the viewers know that it's ITERPRO for the North Americans. With saying that, in an era where data is king, how does ITERPRO navigate the challenges of data privacy and ethical considerations?
Oh, yeah, this is a hot topic for us. Also because we need to be very, very careful, because we manage a lot of sensitive data for our clients. And at the moment, of course, the data are protected and encrypted. So we have different level of encryption, but without going too much into technical details, one thing I want to tell you that we cannot access the data of our client, except we sign contract where we do some sort of maintenance or consulting for them. In that case, of course, we need to access the data to to run some analysis. But let's say that 99% of the time we don't want to access their data because we have there's also an ethics behind that. Because if we think, I believe that in the US this is already a hot topic, and probably in the UK as well with the Red Card Project, you have a lot of former player that try to get the ownership of their own data, which is totally fine because this is what's going to happen in the next 10 years. It's just that, of course, at the moment you don't have like a global regulation. So you have US regulation, European regulation, UK regulation. So I believe that, I don't know, maybe the governing bodies, whatever is FIFA or any other governing bodies, they will need to try to find a way to really define the ownership of those data, because I believe that most of this data, they are owned by the players. But also like clubs which are collecting this data, they are part of it. And then leagues, they buy the data, you know, in order to make business out of that. So it's a quite, tough topic. But in terms of protection, yeah, we are very, very careful about that for sure, because we manage everything from the data of the youth academies up to the finance and the contracts of top players.
Got it. And what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs looking to innovate in the sports industry?
Oh, this is a good one. this is something that I really care about, because I would say that my best advice, it's a little bit counterintuitive now, because I want to be original in this answer, because you have a lot of entrepreneurs saying the same things, but I would say that we should start from the assumption that innovating doesn't mean always like creating something new from scratch. Sometimes innovating it's copying or merging two pieces that were not been merged before ever, and you're creating a new product. You know, so combining existing technique or technology or process sometimes is innovation, and if that innovation works. I mean, most of the issue of founders and entrepreneurs, especially technical entrepreneurs like me, is like always trying to do, you know, the step longer than the legacy. Usually we say in Italy, you know, and in that case, you know, it's very tough because you thinking that thanks to your know-how, knowledge, you know, you're going to be the best entrepreneur. But that doesn't work in that way. So you just need to make sure that innovation is working for your clients, for your target, and then test it, adjust it, test it again, adjust it, test it again. Once you find the right formula, I mean, then do more than what the client needs. Otherwise, it's just like time and energy wasted. And what I can say that probably darkest moment of our journey in InterPro, because everyone has a dark moment in entrepreneurship. I mean, especially during the pandemic, for example, you know, we've been alive for the last 6 years and we've been through wars, pandemic, you know. But in that case, most of the dark moment is because you're focusing on the wrong thing. So that's why I say innovation is not always like having, you know, this game changer, groundbreaking product. It can become a groundbreaking product. But for example, InterPro is a game changer now. But when I started, I was just merging modules. So everything that InterPro does already exists, but not in a unique software. It's just fragmented in different technologies.
For sure. I'm excited to use, you know, your services and products in the next few years with the launch of our club soon in the US. So I'm excited to, you know, learn more and use it. And with saying that, the last question I have is what's next for InterPro? Are there any upcoming projects or expansions you're particularly excited about?
So first of all, I hope you can use it very soon. So of course, I support you guys. I hope really that you can go live with this new amazing project as soon as possible. On the other side, in terms of future of InterPro, this is a very nice period, I have to say, exciting. There's a lot of project in pipeline. I would say that we are going through a a very important capital raise, so things will change in the next few months. But probably the most important thing is that we're launching two new products. So ITERPRO at the moment is known as ITERPRO Sports Intelligence. So it's what I described until now. But the same concept, same technology, without changing anything, just rebranding the technology, can be applied at grassroots level for parents, kids, you know, and amateur clubs as well. We would like to open and democratize the technology, also creating a sort of freemium version. So this is going to be launched probably by the end of 2024. And in September 2024, this is exciting as well. It's going to be launched the agent version. So ITERPRO Agent, which is exactly the current version that the sporting director are using to manage the contracts and the finance, is going to be just vertical for the agent. So basically the final goal here is having all the stakeholders on the same platform in a certain way. Of course, I don't know how much it's going to take, how long it's going to take, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. I really hope as soon as possible. But that's the final goal.
Nice. Well, Marco, those were all my questions. Was there anything that I didn't ask or anything that you wanted to include?
No, actually, it was really nice to answer your question, Karim. And feel free to invite me anytime you want again. You know, I really enjoyed this chat.
Absolutely. Well, Marco, thank you so much for taking the time for being on the One Soccer Nation podcast today.
Thank you, Karim. Thanks a lot. We'll be right back.